A very good morning on behalf of Teach 613. We welcome you to Take 10 Fit Talmud. Ksuvas Daf Lamed, Ksuvas 30a, pagination is 59. We're starting from three lines from the bottom, Tani Rav Chiya, a statement regarding punishment and atonement. And by way of introduction, I'd like to point out that the perspective of Torah on reward and punishment differs from the classic reward and punishment that we are familiar with. Firstly, from perspective of reward, the Torah maintains that if a person had an urge to do the wrong thing and controlled themselves, there is reward for that self-control. Yashav v'lo asa aveira, a person who restrained himself and did not do the wrong thing, gets reward for that. Contrast that with the reward and punishment perspective that we are familiar with. Imagine a person is sitting by a red light and it's not turning green and he's frustrated. He doesn't know why it's not turning green. Why do they give the other people on the main street more time? It's 2 o'clock in the morning. No one is there anyway. Why can't I just run the red light? And he's kind and he's loyal and he's a good citizen. He's got all the good attributes, but he's going crazy. How could it be that I have to sit here at a red light for no good reason? Finally, the light turns green. He proceeds. And out of nowhere, a police car pulls him over, flashing lights, and tells him, "We saw how hard it was for you to restrain yourself at the red light, and you waited till it was green. Had you run the red light, it would have been a $200 ticket, and therefore, because you waited, we're giving you a voucher, a gift, a reward of $200. Wow. That's not the way tickets work in our system of reward and punishment. And that is unique to the Torah perspective that you restrained yourself, Hashem knows you restrained yourself, and you get reward for that. Likewise, there's a unique Torah perspective regarding punishment. Had the person run the red light, but there was no one there to punish him, so then he would have saved himself 30 seconds and he would be very proud of himself that he ran the red light in his good judgment, in his best judgment. He did the right thing, he thinks, and he's thrilled with himself. In Torah perspective, he's totally wrong. He violated a law. And if there's no one there to punish him, then it's even worse. Because a punishment will come upon him for his evil deed. Imagine if we weren't talking about running a red light and nothing happened. We were talking about a guy who stole. If no one caught him, Jewish tradition is Hashem's going to make him pay it back. And even worse than paying it back in this world is going to be if he has to pay it back in next world. And we see that the Torah perspective on reward and punishment is far more oriented to its impact than simply law enforcement of a law. So the Gemara tells us, Tani Rab Chiya taught, Miyom Shecharav Beis HaMikdash, from the time that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and therefore capital punishment is not imposed by the earthly Beis Din, Afal pi shebatlu Sanhedrin, the high court no longer acts on capital cases, arba mises lebatlu, there still remain a concept in the world of the four punishments of Beis Din, even though Beis Din, the high court, is not able to impose them. Asks the Gemara, lo batlu, those judgments are not nullified. Habatlu, they were nullified. We know that the Sanhedrin purposely during the final years of the Beis HaMikdash, made a conscious decision that they would no longer try certain cases. And they definitely are batal nullified. How could you tell me they're not? And the Gemara explains what it meant. Elodin arba mises labatlu. The judgment was not nullified. Intrinsically, those four types of punishments are appropriate for certain behaviors, and Hashem imposes them even though Beis Din can't. For example, Mishen es chayev skila, a person who was supposed to get skila, which was a capital punishment in which the person was thrown off a height and then stoned. O nofel menagag, in our time, Hashem could orchestrate his punishment that he falls from a high place. O chaya darsaso, or an animal attacks him, similar to the way that the rocks would tear his body apart. Mishen es chayev sreifa, a person who's supposed to get the punishment described as burning. O nofel bedleika, he could be consumed in a fire. O nochash makisho, or a snake with venom could attack him, and he's going to die from the venom. Mishen es chayev hariga, a person who was supposed to be killed by the sword. O nimsa lamalchus, it could be he'll end up in the hands of the government. O listam bo'im alav, or wild people will attack him. Mishen es chayev chenek, a person who was supposed to get choking. O tavea benar, it could be that he'll drown. O meis besurunchi, or he'll have a certain ailment that affects the throat, that is like strangling. And what the Gemara is outlining here, although it's intense type of topics, is that even though Beis Din won't impose it, it could be that Hashem will orchestrate these punishments. The underlying theme over here is that these punishments are atonements, and they are ultimately for the benefit of the person, so that he doesn't come to the next world with unfinished business. Tosfos asks, for example, on the fourth line, Aval Kasha, the big question, Chazinan Kama Avar Yonim, we see many people who have many sins to their name, Shemesim Al Mitosam, they die peacefully on their bed. So how do we understand this Gemara? So of course, this Gemara is not meant to say that you're going to see every person who's guilty of this get punished in this way. It's describing one of the options, one of the ways that Hashem runs his world. And Tosfos says, V'yesh lomar, there are a variety of reasons. One possibility could be the person does tshuva, so Hashem is lenient. Or conversely, if you're dealing with a person who's truly wicked, it could be zuchus tolelo, he has a merit which enables him to die peacefully in his bed, and he's not punished during his lifetime, but in the next world he will indeed be punished. The concept, again, is that the punishment may actually be for his benefit, and if the punishment is withheld, then it remains as unfinished business. Likewise, Tosfos on the bottom of Amud Aleph, which is where we started, asks an interesting question. We know that Beis Din removed themselves from capital cases during the last 40 years of the second Beis HaMikdash. So Tosfos asks, why is the wording in our Gemara miyom shecharav Beis HaMikdash, from the time that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? It was already 40 years before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed that they stopped trying capital cases. And Tosfos gives a fascinating answer. He says that sometimes Beis Din would go back to trying cases in specific cases, presumably in order to obtain atonement in a certain situation. We have that concept remains as a minig that before Ma'ariv we recite V'hu Rachum, Those psukim are associated with Malkus, with lashes, because at one point they used to give lashes as atonement before Ma'ariv, and at that time the Vehu Rachum would be recited on a practical level. The ramification for us is that it is recommended that a person recite vidui, the confession, before their death. And the challenge, of course, is that we normally don't like to bring this topic up, as described in Shulchan Aruch Yerideya Shin Lamed Ches, because if you bring the topic up, it could demoralize a person. And therefore, we don't really say, you know, this could be your final days, and therefore let's recite confession, unless the patient is ready for that, and you can get him in a moment of privacy where it's not going to demoralize the people around him, etc., the caregivers. It has to be done just right, because otherwise the damage done could actually influence his health, and you're not allowed to do that with a precariously dangerous patient. So it becomes very delicate when to say vidui and when to try to say the words, Tehei mi sasi kaparasi, may my passing be my atonement. And therefore, there are Rabbanim who recommend that the trend ought to be that people recite vidui before a serious surgery, with the understanding, as it's described in Shulchan Aruch, Bischar sha'ato misvada, in the merit that you're reciting the confession, atochai, you should merit life and a successful surgery. And indeed, I've heard from different people that their parents, father in particular, of one rabbi who described this to me, he said his father said vidui 4 or 5 times before his passing over the last decades of his life. Whenever he went in for a very serious surgery, he would share thoughts with his family. He would recite vidui with this attitude that it should be a merit, and that in its merit, he should be blessed with life. Yeshikoach, thank you for joining.